And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Melody M. from San Diego.
Good evening. My name's Melody. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, am I touching it? Okay. But I want to touch it. If I go too fast, once I get going, I'm on the rice, and if I go too fast, just stop me. Just say, slow down. Melody alcoholic. I haven't spoken in a while. I'm a little out of, on this, but I love Alcoholics Anonymous so much. This is an honor and privilege, and if somebody asks me, I say yes, and I come out. I hate dressing up. I hate putting on makeup. I hate putting on heels. I would rather be in scrubs or sweats, just, but that's not what we do here. When they ask us to come out, they ask us to dress up and look presentable. Because I'm old school. In the olden days, an alcoholic, they were not looked highly upon. In 1939, those guys weren't looking really good and weren't looked highly upon. They were still a degenerative society. And so what they did is they said, you're going to suit up and show up, and you're going to wear a suit. And you're going to wear a suit and tie. And that's, I still try to go by that. When I take a birthday cake and when I speak, I try to wear a dress. But all other times, I'm not. I'm more casual. So I also like about Alcoholics Anonymous, it's kind of, old school is like you share what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And so I'm going to kind of generally try to share about that, and I hope that some of you can relate. And if you don't like me, that's okay. I have been to a lot of meetings in my life, and I have not liked every single speaker, but I have sat in my seat because they told me, when you sit down in Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, you're putting insurance in, does not drink. And there's going to come a day when you're going to feel like drinking, and that insurance is going to pay off, so you better not get up and walk outside the meeting. And I have done that consistently over my sobriety. I got sober in 1984. April 4th, 1984, so my birthday's coming up. I will be 60 this year, so this is kind of an interesting year to be 60 and 35 all in the same year. And I have a sponsor. She lives in Carlsbad, and she's been my sponsor for a very long time. And I have a home group, and that's Drunks Only. And my sponsor has a sponsor. And those things are important to me. So I was born in San Diego. I was born at Balboa Naval Hospital. And so I'm a Navy brat, and my father was in the service. He was in the Korean War and in World War II, and he was a prisoner of war. That doesn't seem to be real cool, but, he did his time, and he came back a different man, and paid his dues for that. So when I first kind of remember my father had TB when I was born, and so he was on a ward in those days where they took out part of his lung, and he had to stay on the ward for, I think it was 8 months. So he didn't even hold me for the first, almost year. But when I first kind of remember my father, I was about 3 and 4 years old, and I don't know why him and I, from the very beginning, had this thing, but we had this thing. I think I remembered he was drinking. I was about 4 years old, and I remember him drinking beer, and we lived in Claremont in one of those old places. I think they were military housing, or they were old little duplexes, but I remember him drinking, and I remember taking a sip off his beer. I remember him smoking and taking a drag off his cigarette. I don't know what there was about that at 4 years old, but it's like, if he's doing it, I'm going to do it. And then I remember one time I went shopping with my mom, and I stole some Chiclets. And so she knew something was up because I was hiding underneath my bed. And that, so she said, Mel, what did you do? And she knew it. And so she goes, we're going to go back to the store. But I took out some Chiclets and I hid them. So they're not getting all of them back, So I was a liar, cheat, and a thief at a very young age. And that just kind of set me up for being an alcoholic, I think. So, around I was like 7, 8, and 9, there was a lot of problems in my home. I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't feel like I do believe that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And so I was experiencing some of the things that go on in an alcoholic home. There was some craziness. My dad would come home, he'd start drinking, he'd pass out on the couch. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand why my dad never held me. Like, my dad never, I don't ever remember my father as a child ever picking me up and ever hugging me and ever telling me that he loved me. And I'm not saying that I'm a victim by that. I don't believe that. But that kind of set me up. I felt something was instinctively wrong with me from the get-go. And so when I took my first drink, there was a sense of ease and comfort that came from my first drink. You know, around the house, I remember at the dinner table, like, I'm a kid. I'm talking about things that are going on during the day and the kids at school and stuff. And he was like, be quiet. We don't talk at the table. And I'm like, what is that? You know? And so I couldn't talk at the table. So I'm this little kid that wants to talk and wants to share. And I'm a Leo. We're loud. You know, I'm like, so I'm talking with my hands and my dad's like, stop. You know, he didn't want to hear anything. He was a military guy, had all of it all day, and came home and didn't want to hear anything. So we stayed out a lot. We stayed outside a lot. We're in those days, you know, that was the 60s growing up, and like we were outside until, I mean, I'm not kidding. The lights would come on. It was 10 o'clock at night. The parents would open the door and say, get in the house. We're going to bed. You know, and no, just 5 more minutes, you know, and you'd be riding up the block up and down the street and doing crazy stuff. And that was just how I grew up. I don't remember doing a lot of homework, which proved later to be a little bit of a problem. But we weren't doing homework. No one was going over anything with me. You know, like, this is how you do math. You know, this is how English goes. We were just growing up and stuff. And I remember my mom and dad had some marital problems. My dad would say to me, you know, your mom doesn't want to be with me. And I was like, I'm 7 or 8 years old. And I'm like, what am I going to do about that? You know, I'm a fucking kid. Okay, that was a freebie. We try not to cuss from the podium, too. MF is my favorite word, but we try not to cuss from the podium because we're supposed to be, you know, respectful of this thing that's up here, so I'm sorry I did that. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do here? I'm not responsible for this. I'm a kid. I can't do anything about this. And I just grew up feeling really, really overly responsible for that stuff. And I think in a way I kind of got broken on that, and I may still have some residual on that, and I don't know. It's going to still play out. I got another 30 years. You know, we'll see what happens. I just felt like I didn't know what was going on. I didn't feel a part of things. I just didn't feel like I fit here. From the very beginning, I had felt like I didn't fit here. I would look up at the sky and go, someday they're going to come back and get me because I don't belong here. And that just kind of kept going. And so, you know, I remember around 5th or 6th grade, there was a bunch of older guys and girls that would be up at the park near my house, and my father would pass out and his wallet would fall out, and I'd steal like a 20 and go up to the park and give it to the guys, and they would go across the street and buy the beer, and the beer would come back, and you know, it was one of those things. They're like, you got us the money, here's a beer, you know. And I was like, I was in a group, and I kept doing that, and I felt like, you know, I belong somewhere. And you know, I remember one time around, you know, 5th or 6th grade, we got really stoned. We were doing marijuana in those days, and you know, I woke up, and there's a canyon behind my house, and I woke up the next morning in the canyon, you know, and you're like, you know, like ants are coming out your ears and your nose, and you're like, what happened? How did that happen? You know, and I had to explain, I don't know. I don't know how anything happened, you know. So I was already blacking out at a young age. And then my neighbor across the street, she was a really good friend of mine, her older sister was in a relationship with this guy, and they were shooting up barbiturates. And we started hanging out with them, and I was drinking and doing barbiturates. And one of my funniest memories was, like, they took us bowling, and in the back of the car, we had been drinking, did some barbiturates, smoked some weed. I'm like, I don't feel anything. And they're like, okay, take another one, you know. And I'm like, okay. So it was like we were in Claremont, had to go to La Mesa to bowl, and I got out of the car, and I just went straight backwards. And I was lying on the cement, looking up the stars, and I'm like, I am home. This is it. This is where I want to be. This is all I've ever wanted, was this feeling. And so I was chasing that for a while, you know, and they just put me into the car. And then the next thing I hear is like all this commotion, and somebody tried to steal one of those ashtrays because they thought it was really cool, the one that has the sand in it, and you have to pick it up and carry it, and it spilled all over the place, and they were being chased out, and then we drove away. It was just, you know, that's how we grew up. And I remember watching him. He made us watch him shoot up sometimes barbiturates, like cooking it and then shooting it up. And then he just went straight backwards and the needle fell on the floor. And I'm like, I'm having none of this. That is not for me. I'm not doing that. But I kept drinking, and drinking went on to, you know, high school. And in high school, we drank, and I was a cheerleader, and we had a lot of fun. You know, we would be drunk at football games, and I was the worst at basketball games because I didn't really care about it. So we'd be like, oh, rooting for the wrong team, you know. One of my girlfriends was really drunk, and she did a herky, and then she kind of snapped her ankle. And I'm, like, laughing because I thought it was so funny, which was so inappropriate at the time. But we were just, that's what we did, you know. And then you go into college, and one of the things that happened is I was trying to get into San Diego State, and I was on the dance team, and I went to sign up, and they go, oh, you didn't get accepted. I'm like, well, that's funny because I'm on your dance team. And they go, no, your grades weren't good enough. You didn't get on the dance team. And I'm like, but if you were a minority or a male athlete, and I'm like, what? I can't be those things. And they're like, well, you didn't get in. So I went into this huge depression, and all I did was like eat and just drink and gained like 30 pounds and had to go to Mesa College, which is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. I liked Mesa, you know, and then I finally got to transfer over to a university. So I went to UCI for theater. No, I was in dance at the time. And I loved dancing. I thought I was going to be the next Shirley MacLaine or the next Audrey Hepburn. The Katharine Hepburn was my favorite. I thought someday I was going to be this actress. And that's what I wanted to do. The only thing is I wasn't very good at it. So I was dancing, and in my first year, I fractured my back. And in dancing, you know, it was on my lower lumbar, and I was lifting something at school, like one of those wrestling mats, and we rolled it up, and I tried to lift it up onto one of the things that you would, you know, have wheels and things like that. And I heard a crack, and that night, I could hardly walk. And that's your center, and it stopped for me. That dancing stopped. And I switched over to fine arts, and then I finished out with a degree in fine arts. I was drinking, bad relationships, things a little bit. I wasn't really involved in relationships much. I was more, because of my background, I'm very shy, and I don't really, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for a guy to fix me. I'm like, I can't fix you, so I don't want you to try to fix me. Just kind of keep your distance. And, but I was drinking and working, and in 1983, I mean, you start suffering consequences when you're drinking. Like you wake up and you don't know how you got home. You wake up in somebody's bed and you don't know how you got there. I totaled my car one night. There was this guy in school that I really, really liked, and we went out and I smoked some pot, which I had stopped when I was in junior high. There was something about pot. When I smoke pot, my eyes close, and then you're like, you can't see to drive, and so it's like, well, I'm not going to do that. So I smoked some pot, and then I was like, oh, now I can't see, and I got to get out of here. And he goes, you can't drive home. And I'm like, no, I'm going to drive home. And this was in Laguna Beach, and I lived in Corona Del Mar. And on the way home, I just remember my last thought. My last thought was like, I'm never going to get this. I can't do this. And I hit a telephone pole. And in those days, there wasn't a divider. So the guy that came, the tow truck driver, he said, I saw you talking to that guy. He goes, I knew you weren't going to be able to drive home. I said, don't say anything to the cops. I've got this figured out. I'm going to tell them what was going on. And I was dancing at Disneyland, and I had pulled a groin muscle, and I told the cop, hey, listen, I pulled a groin muscle. I had a glass of wine, and I had a Vicodin earlier, and that was the 80s. So he drove me home. It's a little bit different time. And so my car was totaled, but the next morning when I woke up, I realized I could have killed somebody the night before. I could have just gone straight over and killed somebody. And I just, that really didn't sit well with me. And said in the morning, I've said, I'm going to try to stop drinking. And that didn't last very long. That was less than 30 days. We all have good intentions, but sometimes it just doesn't last very long. So I started drinking, and I went back to what I was doing. And then that year, I was working at the Disneyland Hotel as a waitress. We were drinking, having a good time. I didn't drink much during my shift, but towards the end of the shift, the last 30 minutes, the last hour, you're like, we're going to get off. Let's start the drinking. So we'd start drinking people's wines, you know, like what they wouldn't drink, and we'd start drinking the bottles. And then when we left, we'd go somewhere, and we'd go like 7 to 10 people, and everybody would buy a round. And so I lived in Corona Del Mar, and I would try to – we did this 4 or 5 nights a week, and I would drive home from, you know, Disneyland area and drive home. And I don't remember most nights that I went home. One night that I went home in this place that I used to live in, Tustin, I was driving home and I was thinking, I like their patio furniture. The next morning, the patio furniture was in my backyard. I don't know how I got that in my car. I don't know if I made another trip, but I had patio furniture. And I remember my roommates, like, you know, in the morning when I woke up, they were like, how did this patio furniture get here? And I'm like, wow. And I have a tendency to, you know, like, if I like it, I want it, and I'll take it. And that's still with me today. I mean, there are nights that I drive by Home Depot, and I'm like, God, I could use a palm tree. And it's like, Mel, we don't do that anymore. You know, you don't do that anymore. I haven't done that, for years. But I think I should have drunk only the other day. I needed potting soil, and on the side of the freeway, there was, like, soil. And I'm like, I'm in the middle of the night. I'm getting the soil in my car, you know. They didn't need it. It was just dumped there, you know. In Poway a couple of years ago, they had rocks on the side of the road, like when they're cleaning and everything, and there were rocks that they threw on the side of the road. I'm picking up rocks. You know, I want to decorate with rocks. It's just, you know. Little too much truth. There were no cameras in Poway, though. So we were drinking a lot, and there was a relationship that I got in. It didn't even last. It didn't, like, not even 2 months. Like most of my relationships. I really liked this guy, and we were drinking a lot, and he was using a lot. And a day after we got together, slept together on the first night, he goes, oh, there's something I need to tell you. And I'm like, well, what do you need to tell me? And he goes, well, I'm married. And I'm like, what? And he goes, well, separated. I have 3 kids. And I'm like, oh, my God, this just keeps getting worse. I'm not like that. That's not who I am. I'm not like that. That's not, you know, I'm not like that. And I was like, when were you going to tell me? And he goes, well, I knew you wouldn't give me a chance, so that's why I didn't tell you. I'm like, but you're with someone. He goes, well, we're separated. And I'm like, that's still, you either clean it up or you're with somebody. And I made that okay in my head for some reason. And we did that for a little bit of while. And then one night I was really, really drunk at a little party and stuff like that. And some things happened that I wouldn't wish would happen to anybody. And the next morning I crawled out of the house with my head between, you know, just my tail between my legs and just like, I got to stop this. And I went to him and I was like, you've got to stop the drugs or I'm not staying. And he goes, well, you can go. I don't need you. And something inside me broke. And I don't know if it was the accumulation of like growing up the way that I grew up, that a guy that I had really valued didn't want me, but something in me broke. And I was drinking, and every single night I'd get my bottles and I would drink in my room. And I just kept thinking, I can't live this way. I want to die. I can't live this way. And I thought about jumping off bridges and not wanting to be here. And one night I cried out in the middle of the, you know, when I was drinking, I was like, God, please help me. And that was like around November, December. And then I started to get into some therapy around, it was like February, March. And I was talking to the therapist about, you know, my life and stuff like that. And she goes, well, I think we need to stop drinking. And I was like, what? I'm like, I just told you about my dad. He's the problem and the guy. What are you talking about? And she's like, no, I think you might want to stop drinking. And she goes, this works a lot better when you don't drink because then you can wake up and kind of get to stuff. And I was like, that's not my problem. I just paid you $100 and that's not my problem. That's bullshit. That's ridiculous. And she goes, well, why don't we just try it? And so I did try to stop drinking, and I was very uncomfortable. I started to go to some AA meetings. I went to a young people's meeting down in Laguna Beach, and this I was sitting kind of close to the front or whatever, and this guy sat next to me. He was kind of cute or whatever, and he goes, "So, how long you been in AA?" And I said, "Well, I've been here maybe a couple of months, not that long." He goes, "Well, how many meetings do you go to the week?" And I was working nights as a waitress, and then you go to bed about 2 or 3 in the morning, and then you sleep most of the day, and then you start it all up again. And I said, "I only go maybe to 2 meetings a week," and he goes, "You're probably going to drink again." And I just was like, there was something, and I just went, "What?" And I was devastated. And I shut down. I didn't say anything. I, as soon as the meeting was over, I got in my car. I cried all the way home. I got home. And in those days, for me, I'd stopped drinking, but you still have alcohol in the refrigerator because you never know who's coming over. You never know if somebody's going to come over and you need to give them something to drink. So I had alcohol in the refrigerator. And all night I got up and I'd go in, open the refrigerator, look. No, I'm not going to do it right now. And I'd go back to bed. And then I'd go back again. And I did that all night. And in the morning, my roommate, who I had been in Overeaters Anonymous for a couple of years before. And I had taken my roommate, who had had a drinking and food problem, a year before to a meeting. And she got clean and sober. And she had told me during that year, "I think you have a problem with alcohol." And I was like, "Amy, I got you to a meeting and you're sober now. I don't have the problem. I think you're reading into this." And she had gone to a 7 a.m. meeting, and I went that next morning down on, it was on Balboa Island at the Alano Club, and I went to that meeting every day for the rest of that year. And in that year, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a little tightly wound. We, in those days, you could smoke in a meeting, and we had coffee cups. And so there were ashtrays, and my job was to put the ashtrays every 2 chairs. And people would move the ashtrays, and I was like, "You can't do that." And they'd like look at me, and they're like, "Why can't I?" I'm like, "Well, because we have a thing in the meeting, and you have to have an ashtray every 2 chairs." And they were like, "Melody, you just keep coming back. You just keep coming back." They knew not to really, and I mean, guys would like try to give me a hug, and I'm like, back off, don't even touch me. I'm like here for alcohol. I don't want you to talk to me. And they knew. They were like, "This one's a little, she's a little tightly wound." And then I got the coffee commitment where I'd pick up the cups afterwards. And people, there was a little sink, and people could have poured their coffee out, but they didn't. They just put it on the counter. And so I'd go up to them and I'd go, "Monty, you didn't pour your coffee out." And they're like, "Oh, don't worry, Mel. You could, that's your job. That's okay." And I was, so I'd go over and I'm like, and they just keep coming back. And then I got to be secretary of the meeting. There was one time during that year that I had a little problem. There was some drunk kids that came in, and this was upstairs, and some of the guys in the meeting thought it was really important that they beat them up and take them outside, and I tried to stop it. I tried to lay on the guy. I was like, "Don't get up. Do not get up." And I was yelling at the other guy, and then I came in the meeting, and I was like, "How dare you not do anything? That's not how you treat drunks." And I stopped going to that meeting, but I started going to other meetings. I just felt really like that just didn't feel right for me. And so, I mean, still to this day, I think drunk people should be here, right? That's who we are. We are either drunk or we're sober, and if we're drunk, it's okay. If you disrupt the meeting, that's where somebody that has time should go up to you and go, "Hey, listen, you get to stay, but you can't disrupt the meeting, because what's most important is the message that's being shared. And if you disrupt that and people can't hear it, that's not what we're here for." And that's the only thing that I've ever done to people in meetings when they're being really disruptive. I try to take them outside and try to talk to them about Alcoholics Anonymous outside the meeting. So I got sober and went on this journey. And this journey has been a roller coaster ride. It is up and down sometimes. I went after my first year. I was like, because of acting, I wanted to go to Europe and see how people lived and stuff like that. I wanted to see how people were in France compared to Ireland, compared to Israel, compared to Italy. So I backpacked through Europe and I lived in Israel for about 8 or 9 months, just seeing how people were. And it was such a rewarding opportunity for me. I mean, one thing that I learned is every country that I went to, kids do the exact same thing with a soccer ball. They play. We are very much alike. Culturally, there's some different things that go on sometimes. I love arguing with a Middle Eastern person because it's like really like, you know, it's really exciting, you know. And I learned a lot about people, and I think that we're very similar. And we're also very different, but we're very similar. And we all want to be loved. We all want to have a family. We all want to be happy. We all want to own a home. We all want to work. We all want to have a, you know, there's a lot that binds us together. And that's kind of what I took away from that. And then I came back home and I tried to become an actress. And I had a little problem with that. I don't like having my picture taken. So I went up to L.A., and that did not work for very long. I was like, no, you can't take my picture. And they're like, you can't get a job without a picture. And you're like, well, I don't want a picture. And they're like, well, this doesn't work that way. And so I tried to get in the back door, and that didn't really work. And so I went in, I was waiting tables and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, what else do I want to do? What else sounds good? And I'm like, I have always, I know this sounds a little crazy, but I've always loved blood and guts. Like when I was a kid and I saw bloody shows, I was like, that is so cool. You know, when I'd see animals like with wounds and stuff like that, I was like, that is so cool. Look at the inside. That is so cool. And so I went back to school to become a nurse. And this is where that education thing comes in. So that was the hardest thing I ever did. I cheated on math and English when I was in school because I'm like, I don't get it. I don't know what that is, you know, so I'm just going to, what are you doing? Okay, so, you know, and I'd do stuff like that. And when I went back to school, I had to like take 5 math classes, you know, and I sat there and like, I didn't understand it was foreign to me. So I had to get tutors and I had to really work on it. And I finally got all the way up to statistics. If you ask me one question about, I don't know anything about math, nothing. There's only one thing that I use in nursing and that's desire over have times volume. That's it. From all my math, that's all I know. But I can figure most things out if I have to. And, you know, and then we have calculators, and then I go to the pharmacist and said, can you do this for me? And they'll do it for me. There's always someone more educated than you. So I have been nursing for the last, like, 18 years. I got my license in 97, and I've been working since 2001, and that has been, it's been a great journey on that one. Right now, I've been in the ER for 10 years, and I see a lot of this disease. I've seen a lot of this disease. I see people that come in, you know, that they're homeless, they're living on the streets, they're in drugs, you know, or drinking, whatever it is, and they're lost. And most of the times I say to them, I said, do you feel lost? And they look at me like, you see me. And I said, yeah, I do see you. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I get it. I said, do you think you're ready? And most of the time they say no. And if they say no, I do what the book says. The book says if they don't want it, you can't give it to them. And I have people dying on gurneys that if they don't want to get sober, it doesn't matter what I say or what anybody says, they're not going to get this. Because there has to be a desire. There has to be some type of desperation that you're willing to do what anybody says to change. And that has been my experience. And all I can, when I talk from the podium, this has just been my experience and my journey. You're going to have your experience and your journey. As many different ways as there are, I mean, people that there are in this room is as many different ways to get sober, and it's all good. I don't judge your journey, and, you know, this has just been my experience. And I don't tell people what I haven't done. So if I haven't done it, I'm not telling people to do it, you know. So when I talk to people, and last night I was triaging people, and the 4 people that I had last night towards the end of the night was all anxiety, and it was, you know, they thought they were having heart attacks, young kids at 22, and it's anxiety, and it's hard to grow up. There's not there's not really books that say, hey, growing up is difficult, you know, it's going to be difficult, trying to find a job, getting a career, getting in a relationship, having a family, paying your mortgage, paying your property taxes, you know, paying for retirement, it is difficult, and it's not easy, and you're not always going to feel good. That's growing up. But like what's happening now is like I talk to these kids because I have to kind of put in what they're, you know, what medicines they're taking and stuff like that. And they're like, I tell you, I swear to God, if I get another 18-year-old that tells me they're on medical marijuana, I'm like, what are you on medical marijuana for? I mean, that is for cancers. I mean, this is opinion. It's for cancers. It's for, you know, things like seizures, multiple sclerosis, some pain, things that, you know, if that's what that stuff is for. But if you can't sleep, I'm not a big fan of that. Because the thing is you start taking that and you don't deal with what's going on. I would love somebody to say to me, well, I've done counseling. So I've been in counseling for like 6 or 7 months, and this is what we decided upon. That makes sense to me, you know? Doing some work. You don't jump from I'm having a problem to I'm taking a pill. That's what I'm doing. I'm taking a pill. You have to do some work on the other things. So, you know, when people come in and they're like hypertensive, it's like, well, let's look at all the things that's going on. You know, maybe you're stressed about stuff. And I have to say, like 9 out of 10 times that we get people in that they're like having chest pain, half of the time it's due to stress. It's they're having some stressful situation in their life that they're clamping down. They're not taking deep breaths. They're kind of going like this. And after a while, the heart says, hey, I'm not getting enough air. And it feels tight and there's pressure. And, you know, it's not a heart attack. It's stress. Stress is hard on the body. Stress over many, many years can give cancers. They're finding that now too. So I'm a really big advocate of, like, I tell people all the time, like, are you in any counseling? And they're like, no. And I'm like, yeah, you need to get some counseling. You need to talk. And what you were talking about, writing, talking, getting in touch with what's going on underneath. You have the iceberg here, but there's this big thing underneath that's going on. And if you don't talk about that, it doesn't matter what you take. You're only masking it for a period of time, and that thing's going to blow up on you, and it's going to blow up on you, and you're going to not be able to deal with life because you were taking a pill, or you were smoking, or you were drinking through all of this craziness because you didn't want to face reality. And I think if we do more talking and do therapy, I'm not a therapist, so I'm not, you know, I mean, I think therapy is great. I think do some talking, you know, if you have a best friend, go for walks on the beach, talk about your life, do something that relieves the stress, and then maybe you won't need these substances. So, in the olden days, they were like, you don't get to use anything from the neck up. That's it. I've been through a year of depression. I remember around my 12th year of sobriety, I just didn't want to live anymore. I didn't get it. I didn't want to live anymore. And I was in counseling, and I went to a group, and I just kept saying, this is going to pass, this is going to pass, this is going to pass. And I didn't, you know, you just get that where you wake up in the morning and you're like, I don't want to get dressed. I don't want to do anything. The only thing that saved me is I went to a job every single night, and I did 8 hours of work, and then I'd come home and sleep. And then I'd sleep most of the day, and I went back to work, and I went to therapy once a week. And that work saved me. It gave me something to do. It gave me, like, I've got to go and show up and not think about myself in my head for 8 hours. And that saved me. And then one day it just lifted. I woke up and I'm like, I don't feel like that anymore. Things are getting better. And there have been times in sobriety that I've had to check in with therapy that it's like, I'm not doing well. I'm just not doing well. I probably should have checked in the last couple of years because there's a vibration going on that's very uncentering for me. It's like I feel people, vibrations, and I'm just kind of, you know, 8 years ago I wasn't doing that. But today I'm kind of like this all the time. It's just like a vibration that I just ain't settled with. But, you know, when you got to pay your mortgage and your property taxes and your bills, and I have a couple of cats. I like to rescue animals now. It's like something that I like to do. I didn't have children, so I rescue cats. I'm up to 9, so of course everybody says she's the crazy cat lady, and I'm like, I'm okay with that, you know. I'm okay with that. They'd be dead on, you know, being on the streets. I'm okay with saving animals. That's like expensive. Cat food, kitty litter, and taking to the vets is about $500 to $600 a month. That could be a vacation once a year, but I made my choices, and I'm okay with that. 10 minutes, you're kidding. What happened? What's it like now? Okay. So, you know, I'm current with my sponsor. I love her very much. She helps me a lot. There are times I got married in sobriety. You know, it was on AA's campus. We met here. You know, it was at one of these, it was an Old Town Speakers meeting. He was on crutches, and I went over to him, and I'm like, hey, you need a nurse? And I was just kidding, but it just... But he was like, well, yeah, you know, and then we started dating and that, you know, and then, you know, a year, there were some red flags, but a year into it, my sponsor was like, I was like, what do you think? And she's like, well, maybe it's the next indicated step. So we got married, and then we got divorced. And the funny thing is, He is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the funny thing is like we were only together for 3 years, and then he left and went and did his Mary thing for a while, and then his job that he works was, there was a, like a bad, you know, the he works construction and stuff like that, and it went bottoms up in 2008, and was, I said, why don't you just come back and live on that side of the house, because I had the, my home is like 2 bedrooms and a bath, and 2 bedrooms and a bath, I said, just live over there. So we were together there for 10 years. As friends. And it's like, who does that insanity? You know? But we did, and we made it work. And he's like one of my best friends. He really is one of my best friends. Today he came over and helped me weed my backyard because it's just that high of weeds, you know, and we did 18 bags of weeds, 16 or 18 bags of weeds, you know, and so he's my friend, and we're friends, and that's, you know, I mean, I wouldn't have that any other way. I don't feel like, I remember for 6 months, I was at La Jolla speakers meeting one night, and he was there, and I was like, I was so mad in that first 6 months, and that they said, would you be the 10-minute speaker, and I was like, absolutely not, because I'm like, if I get up to the podium, I'm going to start spewing my hate, and I can't do it because I was just so angry. And so I even think I left the meeting that night, and I don't ever do that. But we did a 4-step with each other. We made amends to each other, and now we're clean. You know, I don't owe him anything. He doesn't owe me anything, and we're good friends. And I, you know, that's how I think we're supposed to be, you know. Where are we now? So I was born in San Diego. Did I go too fast? Okay, thank you. So 2 minutes. No, it is not. Oh God. Okay. So, you know, this has been the best deal in town for me. I mean, I got a cup of coffee this morning in a shower. I have been overpaid for the day. I have had some some great experiences to go on some medical missions to other countries, and I'm hoping to go to Nepal this year. I don't know if I can afford it, but I'm hoping to go to Nepal. And, you know, when you go to people that don't get medical attention, and they will sit there for 8 and 10 hours, and they don't say a word, and if we tell them, we can't see you today, we're at too many, they will sleep on the grass outside, and they will come back the next day. And they just sit there, and all they want is for somebody to, you know, maybe, you know, look at them and say they're okay, and give them some help, because maybe they're suffering from arthritis or whatever it is. We are so fortunate here. When I came back from Europe, I remember going into a grocery store and like looking at all the fruits and vegetables and going, oh my God, this is, I can't believe how good I have it here. I am so fortunate. And today my life is about, like, I was sitting in the backyard with some of my cats walking around, and the butterflies that are coming up, they were like, you know, butterflies are like, I mean, in an hour you can count like 100. And they're like going up, you know, and hopefully my cat doesn't kill one, and the birds and the sun, and just like, I live an exceptional life. And I would have missed it. I would have missed it. I see people miss it all the time. I've seen people fallen because they were drunk and get brain bleeds and they die. I see people that crash their car and they die. I see people that are riding bikes and they break their neck and they die because they're drunk. Crystal meth is like, oh, that's a whole nother thing. That's an awful drunk. Because that makes your brain crazy after several years of using that stuff. You know, I mean, we are the fortunate ones. If you're trying to get sober, just stay with us. We don't care what you believe in, just stay with us. Come to meetings, try to shake hands with somebody. If you're having a bad day, say, can I talk to you? Just stay with us, because it's about staying here, staying put, finding a better way of life. I know it's here. Everybody that's drinking and used that I've met that has come back, not one of them has come back and said, it was so good out there. I had such a great time. It's so great. All of them come back and said, my life is shit. And I don't want to go back to that. This is freedom. I have absolute freedom in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can say anything. It comes with consequences. I have said things that have pissed people off, and it comes with consequences. You just have to be willing to pay the consequences, like having 9 cats. The one thing that I can say is, like, when I was young and I looked up at the stars and thought, I don't belong here, I now feel like I'm one among many. I just want to be a worker among workers. I just want to do whatever I can to make the world a better place. Be kind, be loving, you know, give. And if you want to be happy, help someone. You know, it's very hard to be depressed if you're helping someone, because what happens is you find that somebody has it worse than you, and that your bed isn't that bad, you know, and it helps you to get out of yourself. And I thank God that I work days, because for 12 hours, I'm not thinking about myself. I'm thinking about something else, and I can't think about myself. So I like being able to work. And even if you can't work, I don't know, help, you know, drive people somewhere, call somebody on a phone, you know, garden, take a dog for a walk. I mean, volunteer at the Maine Society. They need people walking dogs. There's nothing better than healing than walking animals and being with animals. There's something about animals that heal us. They just know our souls, and they're this. They just want to sit with us. They just want to be with us. So, you know, for me, Alcoholics Anonymous, do I have 5 minutes? Okay. Yeah. So so don't get married. No. not in AA. No. You know, the thing over here, these guys didn't have that when they first got sober. The Washingtonians started, and then you had the Oxford group, and there were 6 tenets that they had. And out of the 6 tenets, they kind of brought this about. And so, I try not to make it really complicated. I know that there's a thing called the Big Book, Big Book Awakenings, and I went to that for a little while, but it was so interesting to me. I kept wanting to go, but you're reading the black print. I don't get it. You're reading the black print. You didn't start anything new. This is the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't get it. It's not new. And I just felt like, people had such a hard time. They didn't feel like they were doing it right. And people, they were having anxiety attacks, meltdowns. And I'm like, listen, go back to the big book and just read the black print. It's in there. That's where the truth is. We have to do what those guys did, the founding fathers, the first 100, and just keep doing what they did. It's not really complicated. Don't drink for 24 hours. Go to a meeting. Trust God. And if you don't know anything about God, that's absolutely fine too. If you want God to be like the doorknob, the whales in the oceans that seem to know how to go back and forth every year without a clock, without a navigation system, trust that. With science, fan of science, there's something like 450,000 galaxies. We're in one galaxy with one Earth planet. Do you think there's anything like this on another galaxy? Probably. So what do I know about God? I know nothing. I go to church. I like church because church centers me. It makes me quiet. I like what I learn. It challenges me to help others. It challenges me to try and be a better person. There's nothing wrong with that. So I go to church. I'm mad at my church a little bit right now. I'm Methodist. They just voted that gays can't get married in the church and you can't have a gay minister. And I'm like, well, that's bullshit. You know, because it's like, do they think straight people cornered the market on what's normal? Half of us in a divorce, you know? I mean, come on. Where do gay kids come from? Straight marriages half the time, you know? So what the hell? I mean, we did not corner the market on what's normal. I'm having a little problem with that, but I still go to church. I love church. I love the traditional thing. And I love sitting. I love trying to be quiet because I don't do it very much. I wouldn't be a very good Buddhist because they actually have to sit and meditate for hours. And I'm like, I mean, a minute and a half and I'm done. I'm done, you know? So there's a lot of work that I still have to do. And so I hope that if you're having a hard time in Alcoholics Anonymous, grab someone. If somebody has time, they have no problem sitting and talking to you at all. You know, I mean, that's what we're here for. We're here to carry the message, to help the newcomer, to give away what we've learned, and to be kind, to be kind. I hope you guys continue to stay sober. If you fall off the wagon, come back. We know that this is the better way. Some guy up here a couple of weeks ago said, drunk bad, sober good. It's not really complicated. I need to get a shirt that says that. Drunk bad, sober good. Because this is the better way of life. You're awake and you can able to see below the iceberg and get to things. And so that's the journey. I wish you all well. Thank you.